Hello, this is John Connell. Welcome back to Book Talk. This week it's Robert Hardman, journalist, author and documentary filmmaker, best known for his work on the British royal family. Here he is, talking about his excellent and widely praised new biography of the King, Charles III.
My book opens with a cold, windy morning in Windsor Great Park when I was following the King on his rounds as newly appointed, and he appointed himself, Ranger of the Great Park. And he was wanting to get up close to a herd of deer he'd spotted near the statue of George III. And he came out with a very interesting remark. He was just looking at these deer and he said, the weight on their heads is amazing, the strength of their necks to support those antlers. And it struck me that here we had a very good metaphor, really, for the man himself. It's the old Shakespearean adage of the burden on the head that wears the crown. And that's really what this book is all about. In my book, I reveal the way in which Charles III has not just gripped his new role, but I think is genuinely enjoying the role of king. He is, as one of his closest allies put it to me, happier than ever, and with a new, what they call a new serenity. But let's rewind to the very start of the reign and to that extraordinary week in September 22. I think we all remember where we were when we heard the news that the longest reigning, longest serving monarch in our history had passed away. And I've been lucky enough to be entrusted with the inside story of what really happened that week. But that very evening, she was certainly buzzing, as some of her staff told me, and not least because she'd also had a winner at Goodwood. But she retired to bed early, and that was really the last time that many of those closest to her ever saw her. Still, everyone was thinking in weeks rather than days, but the following morning, the Prince of Wales, as he still was, and the Duchess of Cornwall, they flew up from Dumfries House. There's a full account of that, how they landed. They didn't even have a car when they landed in the grounds of Burke Hall, their home there, but spent a good hour at the bedside of the Queen. And the Prince of Wales then adjourned to Burke Hall for a few hours to give his mother some rest. And while he was there, suddenly the call comes through, you need to get over here fast, back in the Land Rover, up the windy roads, across the estate, and suddenly the call comes through to the Land Rover. Can the Prince of Wales, as he still thinks he is, pull over to the side of the road? And it's a call that's come through. It's the Queen's private secretary, and for the first time he is addressed as Your Majesty. And from that moment, everything changes. My book goes into the debate around when this great operation that's been planned for years, Operation London Bridge, when should that kick in? We hear the inside story of that extraordinary last journey that that the Queen's coffin took from Balmoral down to London via the glens of Aberdeenshire, the roads of Scotland absolutely rammed, the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, the first British monarch to die in Scotland. What did that mean? How did that pan out? It's all in the book. Then the King has to start planning his coronation. And obviously there are all the other things that go on there. But the coronation planning is fascinating because really very few people could even remember the last coronation. The whole structure, the liturgy, it all changes. It doesn't look like it. We all watch what looks like a very ancient and is a very ancient ceremony with its roots in the Old Testament. But boy, there are a lot of tweaks going on behind the scenes. So I go into all that. It's fascinating to see, for example, the somebody literally sawing St. Edward's crown in half. I witnessed that with my own eyes. I go into all the preparations with the crown jewels. They had special codes and special secret locations. They couldn't even call it St. Edward's crown. They gave all the crowns special code names according to watches. So St. Edward's crown was Operation Patek. The Imperial State crown was Operation Rolex and so on. That's all in there. And there's a lot of humour, a lot of funny stories on the way to the Abbey of archbishops and deans and priests and prelates and everybody else terrified they're going to get things wrong. I was privy to the rehearsals where many things did go wrong, like in all good rehearsals. The Archbishop of Canterbury, terrified he's going to put the crown on the wrong way around. He's got his own special mantra that he's been reciting for weeks to say that he doesn't get it wrong. All that's unfolds, and then we get into the coronation itself. And it is a magical event. And of course, most people saw it anyway. It had a worldwide TV audience in the billions. But it's this book gives you what was going on behind the scenes, both before, during, and after. And then, of course, I address the whole issue. What's changed? How's this reign changed? All the things that have changed internally, externally, the tonal shift, the greater degree of transparency, the nerves within the palace, the big head-scratching issues. What on earth do we do with all these homes and castles now? Because the king, as well as all the properties the queen had, he's got his own. How's he going to handle that? And key to it all is, you know, wither this slimmed-down monarchy. He's got this great support team at his side, but it is small. It's led by Queen Camilla and the Prince of Wales. There's a large part of the book is devoted to what I call the headwinds, these transatlantic challenges coming in from California, where the Sussexes have much to say. Both within weeks of the new reign, there's a six-part Netflix series saying how unhappy they were with their royal lot. It's followed rapidly by, of course, Prince Harry's book Spare. There's all the reaction to that. What was going on inside while that was all unfolding? How did that impact on the monarchy? There's obviously the whole story of Prince Andrew, what happens to him. And there's an entire chapter looking at the major, major challenges facing the king in what I call the three R's, which are republicanism, race, and the realms. He's, of course, king of 14 other countries. Are they going to keep him as king? If not, why not? What about the rapidly growing calls for historical reparative justice to atone for Britain's imperial role? The crown and therefore the monarch is right in the eye of that particular storm. It's all addressed in this book. There's very much more in this book, but essentially, I recognize that we live in the age of soft power. The use of influence and persuasion and charm over brute force to get things done, and that is what the monarchy does for Britain. And I think that is what we've seen both as the world came to salute the passing of Elizabeth II and then returned to salute the coronation of Charles III. They weren't coming out of curiosity or politeness. They were coming to witness a spectacular manifestation of continuity. And it matters. I think the overwhelming majority of this country are still keen to maintain that. And this book, I hope, will explain why. In closing, I know it's traditional with Book Talk to nominate another book. So I'm going to go for Evelyn Waugh's Scoop. I've always been a journalist. I remain a journalist. It's the great journalist novel. Enjoy that too.